Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, reminding you that here on WEAA, the voice of the community, 88.9 FM, and WEAA is supported in part by Bosch, offering Bosch dishwashers at Bray and Scarf. We are now about to have a conversation with Senator Brian Frosch. He is a state senator from District 16 in Montgomery County, just announced his candidacy for attorney general, though all of us had a sense he was running, and we've had the other folks who say they're running as well on, and our serious conversations we're having with those would be our next attorney general. And Brian, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be with you.
I'm glad. I know you're stuck in traffic, but you know, so let me ask you this question, Brian. If you're attorney general, what can you do about the traffic?
Well, if I could answer that question, I think I could rule the world. Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs, but I'm afraid the Attorney General is not going to have much direct impact on traffic.
Well, I just thought I'd ask. I mean, I just thought maybe you might be able to do something. But in all seriousness, when you announced, a couple of quick questions at the top and then some of the questions I've asked all the others as well who have been on this program, what do you mean when you call yourself the people's attorney general? What does that mean as opposed to what anybody else would be?
Well, I think that's a key part of the job of the attorney general. I've been all over the state and talked to literally thousands of people, and people feel like there's nobody who's standing up for them, that there's nobody who will fight for them, who will have their back, and that's the part of the job that I relish the most. I mean, the Attorney General has a broad range of responsibility, but at bottom, the Attorney General is the people's lawyer. Your client is the state of Maryland, but your client is also the people of the state of Maryland. That's part of the job that I think is critically important.
And so I'm curious what form that takes in a practical way. What does that mean that you would do differently than has been done in the past, or what visions you have about what that means about what you would do in the future that might not be what people are thinking an AG would do? What form does that take?
I can give you some examples of what former and the current attorney general have done in that connection. We had this mortgage foreclosure crisis in 2008 and following, subprime market crash. And banks engaged in activity that was flat-out illegal. And Doug Gansler went after them, as did attorney generals across the nation, and won a settlement close to $1 billion for the state of Maryland, for the people of the state of Maryland. Joe Curran took on the tobacco manufacturers and won a settlement. He was really the first in the country, I think, to go after the tobacco manufacturers for their false and misleading advertisements that caused the state to lose or spend millions, billions of dollars in health care that might have been avoided had the false advertising not occurred. And Joe Curran got a settlement of about $4 billion, which we've used to improve the lives of Marylanders, to improve health care, to smoking cessation programs, et cetera. And I think those are sort of quintessential examples of what it means to be the people's lawyer.
So for you, what's on the horizon? I mean, what when you see all the articles coming out about how even now still Bank of America has been shown by its employees to have set people up with mortgages only to foreclose on them. You've seen these other stories that abound about that kind of that some people look on as a corporate attack on regular citizens. So, again, what are you looking at? What do you think is the next front that has to be fought by an attorney general for the people of Maryland?
I think it would be premature for me to identify specific cases, but I can tell you that I think we're looking at a similar situation with respect to debt collection practices, and I'm talking about in the area of credit card debt and student loan debt. In the area of credit card debt, the lending institutions, when the loan is delinquent for more than 180 days, offload it. They sell it for pennies on the dollar, and they sell it to just debt collectors. And these
right.
folks have the same problems that the banks had when they started foreclosing on the subprime loans. They get a spreadsheet from the bank, and they may know nothing more than that. And they may say Brian Frosch or Mark Steiner owes me $2,000. They don't know really whether Mark Steiner or Brian Frosch has made a payment on the loan. They don't know whether either of us has been through bankruptcy. But they go out to collect the loans based on that information, and oftentimes they get judgments they shouldn't get, and the folks who are the borrowers, most of them should have paid their loans, but many of them end up in serious trouble, not just because they get civil judgments against them, but because our system is so convoluted and frankly screwed up that some of them end up in jail. We've tried to, in this past session, I had some legislation that sought to address those issues, and we'll be taking on again as a policy matter, but you can see coming the same kind of problems that we had with the subprime foreclosure crisis. And I can't identify, and it would be irresponsible, I think, to identify an individual company, but you know, looking off in the distance, I think you can see that as a problem.
Folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. We're talking with State Senator Brian Frosch from Montgomery County, who has announced his candidacy for Attorney General. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com and join in on this conversation as he makes his way to the studio in great Maryland traffic. 410-319-8888. Every time I get in the car, I think I'm going to be somewhere on time, especially if it's outside of Baltimore. Something always happens on the road.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you calling in. You know, one of the things that I'm curious about as Attorney General, these may not be directly in the purview of the Attorney General, but they're questions I've asked the other candidates as well. And you raise the issue of credit card debt and student loan debt. You saw the U.S. Senate had a compromise bill passed around student loan rates to keep them down at 3.9%. That happened in the Senate, and immediately when that happened, certain universities and colleges said, "Well, then we're going to raise our tuition rates."
Hmm.
So, which of course just nullifies what they just did in some ways, because it means students are going to still have to pay more if they're going to have to borrow more. So,
right.
So the question I have as Attorney General, as one of the three top officers in the state of Maryland, and you represent the people, but you also represent the institutions of the state of Maryland. What role do you play in saying maybe we shouldn't be raising the rates in our colleges if they're going to affect things that we're going to have to take on as Attorney General around the student debt crisis?
Well, you know, one of the things that I've worked on as a legislator is keeping the colleges and universities in the University of Maryland system affordable while maintaining excellence in education. In the Ehrlich administration, we cut literally more than $100 million from the assistance that we were giving to the University of Maryland system, and at the same time started raising rates of tuition. And I introduced legislation that would have capped the rate increases for tuition and also put the university system on a formula funding basis. When Governor O'Malley came in, he took both of those objectives to heart. He's increased the funding for the system and has kept tuition much more affordable, capped the rates for some period of years in a row, and then we've had a couple of modest increases. I think that's extremely important. It is not, however, within the direct purview of the Attorney General.
No, it's not. But you have a bully pulpit.
Yep, and it's one that I think I know how to use based on my long experience in the Senate and in the House, and would gladly take advantage of as Attorney General.
So let me ask you this question. What then sets you apart from Delegate John Carton or Delegate Bill Frick, who's also from Montgomery County, or Delegate Aisha Braveboy from Prince George's County, all of who are running for the same seat? All of who, I guess, there's differences politically between you all, what you've done in the House and the Senate, but not huge differences in your votes and what you've done. So what sets you all apart? I mean, what sets you apart from the rest?
Two things. First, my experience as an attorney. The Maryland Constitution sets the highest bar for qualifying for the Attorney General of any of the state offices. It's not merely residence. It's not merely it's not merely age. You have to have practiced law in Maryland for at least 10 years. I've been practicing law for a lot longer than that. I have recognition from peers and from respected institutions that follow the law profession, and I have experience in all aspects of the law. Secondly, I think what sets me apart from the other candidates or potential candidates are my accomplishments in the General Assembly. I mean, first, it's a good marker for where I will be as Attorney General. But second, I've got legislation that I have either led the Senate on or led the House on or authored in, I think, the areas that people care the most about. For example, you know, consumer protection. I sponsored the law that outlaws foreclosure scams. I led the Senate in reforming the ground rent process in the state of Maryland, but principally Baltimore City was most affected, in reforming the foreclosure process. We have the fastest foreclosure process in the country. And Governor O'Malley introduced legislation. I worked hard on it and got it through the Senate. It makes the foreclosure process fairer to homeowners. I sponsored legislation that stops the MVA from selling our personal information. Before my bill, they were selling your name, your age, the kind of car you drive, your address, your phone number to commercial entities. Stop that. Had legislation this past year that will make it easier for folks who are underwater in their mortgages to refinance at market rates of interest. I've also been the author of dozens of laws that protect Chesapeake Bay and Maryland's environment, and the sponsor and leader on measures that make Marylanders safer, like the gun violence prevention legislation that we passed in this most recent legislative session.
So, there's things again that I want to get your take on that others have answered as well on this program, which is even though as Attorney General, your job is not to oversee the prisons, job is not to prosecute criminal law unless there are appeal cases you have to take as Attorney General in criminal cases. But again, as I said, you have the bully pulpit.
Yep.
And so, what does Brian Frost do as Attorney General to use a bully pulpit as a chief legal officer to address the mass incarceration of mostly African-American men in this state and the constant harassment of African-American men by police departments in this state? We had a show here yesterday where there wasn't a person that we interviewed who was male and black, middle class, working class, or poor, that hadn't been stopped, forced to get out of their car, sit on the curb,
right.
have their car searched. And then, and not to mention just that the tens of thousands of black men who go to prison for nonviolent crimes and for crimes of drug possession. So what do you do as Attorney General to address those issues?
Yeah, let me say first that it's not just a Maryland problem. This is a national problem.
Well, there's no question about that. Right.
Yeah. And what I've done in the General Assembly is try to keep people who are nonviolent out of prison. Folks who are violent belong in prison, and oftentimes belong there for a long time. But to give you an example, in 2012, we had a problem with the Office of Public Defender, and the Court of Appeals ordered the state to ordered the public defender to represent people at bail review hearings. It was an opportunity, I thought, to address the problem that you described, that we're arresting people for minor crimes, keeping them in jail for longer periods than makes any sense at all, and sometimes putting them in jail at all, even one night, makes no sense. So in the legislation to reform the Office of the Public Defender, and it was my legislation, we wrote a provision that says, look, for small crimes, for any crime that has a sentence of less than 90 days, and for possession of small amounts of marijuana, the police have the discretion to give the person a citation instead of handcuffing them, taking them to jail and holding them sometimes for weeks, sometimes for much longer, but almost always overnight, unless they happen to hit the right bail commissioner or district court judge the first time around. In my committee, we have worked on legislation to help people who are in possession of small amounts of marijuana not see jail time. We passed a bill this year from the Senate, came out of my committee, that that would say if you're caught with less than 10 grams of marijuana, you're liable for a civil fine. The bill passed the Senate. It failed in the House. And while the Attorney General doesn't have, as you noted, a direct shot at that kind of policy, it is a bully pulpit, and I would use the bully pulpit to try to keep folks who basically lead good lives, are not violent people, but get pulled over or busted for minor crimes like possession of a small amount of marijuana out of our jails and out of our prison systems.
Can the Attorney General do something, at least in terms of a dialogue with conversations with the leaders of our judicial system, of our the police commissioners and leaders around the state, our law enforcement leaders around the state, about, I mean, I'm stuttering just because I don't know, I'm trying to find the right words, to stop what is tantamount to harassing African-American men in the state. I mean, it goes on over and over. I remember what happened with the state police and the ACLU, but it's much more rampant than that. And I think if, at the very least, some kind of group should be called to have a conversation about that, to open it up for conversation, to change some attitudes and ideas so this is not a constant state of affairs.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's exactly what I did on this public defender law. We met with not only the public defender, but also the law enforcement officers from around the state, the police chiefs from the various jurisdictions, the line folks, and the prosecutors to work out the provision that I described to you a couple of minutes ago. I know how to do that stuff. I've done it. successfully on the public defender law, and I continue to use the office of the Attorney General as a forum, as a platform to make those kinds of changes and reforms.
So one of the things, another question that came up here in the last several interviews we've done with the AG candidates, is since this, especially since this radio station and this program is housed at Morgan State University, is the current lawsuit between the state of Maryland and the historically black colleges and universities of the state over funding and other issues. And the AG's office has to prosecute that case, has to take that case. How are you going to handle that?
Well, you know, this is another issue that is one of longstanding. It's gone on for decades. And I've worked with my colleagues in the Senate, Joan Carter Conway, Doris Kelly, and others to try to improve the funding for the historically black colleges and universities. The Attorney General has conflicting obligations here. I mean, first of all, the Attorney General represents the university system, but also directly represents some of the historically black colleges and universities directly. Morgan happens not to be one, but others like UMES and Toppin and some of the others are directly represented by the Attorney General. And so there's a conflict of interest within the Attorney General itself.
Why don't we just stop for a moment? We made it through. Brian, good to see you. Have a seat. Welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
You should be
running for the head of the Department of Transportation to deal with. But it's not an elected post.
We have a great Secretary of Transportation, but I may have to call him after this.
So it's good to have you in the studio here for the last few minutes. At least you made it up here. So this race, just a political question. This race is clearly divided by geography. You have three folks coming from the D.C. area, two from Montgomery County, one from Prince George's County, and one from the Baltimore metropolitan area. And so how do you see this playing out politically? I mean, this state is always divided by region, it seems, in terms of interest, especially between Baltimore and rural areas and D.C. suburbs, and divided by race often.
Right.
So how do you see this race for Attorney General playing out in terms of all that?
Well, I have strong support all over the state, from just plain folks to political leaders. And among the political leaders include lots of folks from the Baltimore area, lots of folks from Prince George's, and just about everybody from Montgomery. I mean, you know, Attorney General Steve Sachs and Governors Hughes and Glenn Denning support me. In Baltimore City, all the state senators support me, Jack Young, the president of the city council. In Prince George's, County Executive Rashern Baker and most of the state senators. A majority of the Senate, supermajority of the Senate supports me. So I think I've got good political outreach in every jurisdiction of the state, and the ones that matter the most in the Democratic primary are the ones where I'm strongest. And it's not just the political leaders. I mean, I've been to each region of the state, each county, and met with the leaders and also just folks who care about public policy and the Office of the Attorney General.
So is there a contradiction there on some levels for you or for anybody between running as a people's candidate, kind of a crusader to protect the people's interests, and also being a political insider and having all this support?
I don't think so. I mean, if you talk to the political leaders who support me, they'll tell you that I'm independent, I'm fair, and I listen. So I have great support, but there's nobody who I agree with all the time. Mayor Ed Koch in New York used to say, look, if you agree with me 70% of the time, you should vote for me. If you agree with me 100% of the time, you should see a psychiatrist.
Let's get a quick call in here before we have to run out of time. And Chris in Woodlawn, you're on the air. Oh, don't put it on. Oh, you got the headphones on. I'm sorry. Chris, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi, Chris.
Hi.
My question is, as it refers to the small amounts of marijuana, I heard you use that phrase in about 20 seconds. You used it about four or five times. There was a previous discussion that was a larger discussion, and that covered the disparity in sentencing between powder cocaine and crack cocaine. And
yes.
There's never been a resolution to that issue. And somehow the marijuana issue has taken control, has dominated the discussion. So I'm wondering if we can get back to that, and as state's attorney, how you would address that, specifically how it affects the African-American community and policing and law enforcement, criminal justice.
Yeah, it's a federal problem, mostly. The federal sentences for possession of crack and possession of cocaine are widely disparate. They're not as widely disparate in Maryland. And so within state law, I think we have better treatment. But you're right. I mean, you put your finger on an incredibly important problem. And sometimes we put people in jail for way longer than necessary. That's a good example of where federal policy has gone so awry that people end up spending years in jail that probably don't serve society well and certainly don't do any good for the folks who receive the sentences.
So, Brian, why don't you – could you give all of our listeners information on how to contact your campaign and find out more about what you're doing?
Sure. I'm on Facebook, Brian Frosch, and my website is brianfrosch.com.
That's easy enough.
It's pretty straightforward. We try to make it easy.
So – but two things we look forward to. We're going to be hosting an AG's debate here at WEA at Morgan State University before the election, of course, and not tomorrow morning, so we won't give people a chance because of the campaign.
I'm going to have to get a hotel room if it's tomorrow morning, I think.
But we invite you to that when that happens, and I do appreciate your being here and your kind of forthright answers to all the questions.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure. I apologize for being late.
You can't sweat the small stuff. You're here.
Right.
Senator Brian Frosch, who's running to become the next attorney general, is now state senator from District 16 of Montgomery County. Brian, thanks so much.
Thank you, Mark.
We're going to take a brief break and come back with my friend Marshall Bell to talk about his book, Baltimore Blues, Harm City, and more. Stay with us.